From the broken ruins of Babylon, this is End of Days Radio. Broadcasting from the Emerald City in the heart of the Pacific Northwest. From a rusty and barely functioning radio station, Daniel stands alone with his microphone against the creatures of the night. But he is not alone in this fight. End of Days! Radio! Rage against the Illuminati.
Hello and welcome to End of Days Radio. This is Daniel, and I'm broadcasting to you from that itty-gritty Emerald City in the heart of the Pacific Northwest. And today's date, Saturday, June 27th, 2026, the year of our Lord, 2026. Today's guest is Isho Nasraya. A little bit about him, in his own words. I'm a religious scholar with over 20 years of research and noticing things. And having been on Godlike Productions, early 4chan, later 8chan, lived through 9/11, WikiLeaks, Snowden, and false flag psyops. There's a lot of alternative history that gets overlooked by the mainstream. For the last 10 years, I've been running my own business of teaching internal alchemy, new classes, and coaching that helps people reconnect with the divine spark and fire within. The videos on my channel, and his channel, by the way, sorry, gotta pull up the tab here, is Alchemy Lair of the Labs Productions. And his, let's see, where to, sorry, the videos on my channel is a long-requested endeavor by students to have a summary of what I've studied be made into courses. So he has some really interesting videos. He is a little bit of a teacher. Continuing, the content and info in my videos shows a red thread of connections in all major pantheons and religions, a connection both historians and archaeologists will gladly ignore in favor of splitting up the religious communities or to favor their superior, in quotes, scientism, agnostic atheism. I pick apart the evolution story by referencing stone tablets and their content that goes in stark contrast to the mainstream academic version. And it continues, but I'm going to go ahead and bring him on so that he can tell you in his own words who he is. Hello, Isho.
Thank you, Daniel.
No, anything you wanted to add to that introduction?
I think the videos that I make are essentially one-man podcasts, yap sessions, where I essentially cover a topic and then I try to find more alternative scripture or like something else other than just the mainstream canon. And then it's like, can I make it interesting? Can we follow different characters? Who is like Enoch in the Book of Enoch in Genesis? Who is so-and-so King Solomon, etc.? And I've gone down that rabbit hole for years, and I should have made my YouTube channel earlier, but I felt this was the right time. And I hope you like my videos if you're interested in those kind of topics. I think your introduction was really nice.
Well, I'm looking at a pretty interesting sort of image right here. You have a digital version of yourself up here. It's like a bull.
An avatar. It's a dragon, obviously. So I play the game called VR Chat from time to time. I have some friends there. We sit in some public worlds. We talk to people. And the backdrop there you can see is my world that I built, kind of, and my avatar I've worked for a couple of hundred hours on just to make it, you know, personal. But this is how you'll recognize me if you ever see me in VR chat, essentially. I didn't have any webcam, so I felt like I wanted to have some presence at least. But that's my virtual avatar. So.
Yeah, I like that. It's a good way to give people a visual without having to wear like a mask or just using a picture or something like that. I think that's pretty cool.
Honestly, in this day and age, you kind of want to protect yourself and your privacy a little bit because everything is available online. And as soon as someone has a picture of your face, you end up in a Photoshop edit somewhere. And I've been there before, so I kind of know how that feels like. But
yeah, and in fact, with the AI nowadays, it's even worse. They could have you in all kinds of strange situations.
That's a good tip. I want to say, if you ever get a call from someone on your phone and they want you to answer like yes or no questions and stuff, it's very likely that they might be recording it so they can make a clone of your voice. So you should, if they don't say anything, like you should just kind of hang up because there's so many scam callers out there.
But yeah, I agree. I've seen videos where they have, you know, Obama or Joe Biden talking and giving a speech, and I could not even tell it was fake. Like I was like, oh yeah, that's right, go Obama, that's right, tell them. And then you start to notice after a while the eyes aren't quite moving right. Like no, that, oh man, I got all excited. I thought Obama was making it.
I met a guy in VRChat using 11 Labs voice clone, and he bought the Joe Biden pack. And then he showed up in a Joe Biden avatar and he couldn't shut up talking about ice cream. So yeah, you can do some really fun stuff with the voice cloning.
Honestly. See, I got to get into that stuff. I'm getting a little older. This technology is passing me up, but I got to learn how to do this stuff. I want Joe Biden to come on my show.
Yeah, it'd be some Kill Tony moment to have Joe Biden on.
But the name Isho, is that Japanese? What does that mean?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So I like the philosophers, the prophets, the sages, the wise men of the past. I've learned a lot from different, you know, religions and stuff. And then one day it was like, you know, God said, oh, maybe you should change name or whatever. So I said, what should I change name to? And then it was like, yeah, well, you should go look it up. And I said, okay, what am I looking for? Well, it's in Aramaic, so obviously it's not, you know, in normal. And then I thought about carrying that name just so that people can have a chance to get to know that name, because not many people know what it means or where it comes from.
Could you tell us a little bit about that?
So it is Isho from Aramaic, and Nasraya is his hometown, where he's from. And then the extra they add onto it is usually Emshiha, and then Bar Yosef and Bar Mariam. So that would be his full name if he was alive today, if he walked with us. And I think that the name that we have today of, say, Christ has been translated from Aramaic into Hebrew, from Hebrew to Greek, from Greek to Latin, from Latin and Greek to English. And on that kind of Chinese telephone game, we forgot the actual name. And so I'm kind of bringing it back, and I carry the name because, I don't know, it felt like the right thing to do.
At what point in your life did you start to get into this matter of deep esoteric topics? Was it childhood or later on?
It was around the age of 15, which would be 20 years from now. So I started out with some light Buddhism, some Christianity, and I dipped my toes in stuff. And then eventually, at the age of 21, I've studied most pantheons and most scripture. And then I met my first teacher, and he was a Mason from Boston. And he taught me a lot of stuff that you normally can't find in normal books. And he also taught me how to find interesting books. And I read a lot of the stuff, and it comes from Freemasonry. Sometimes it comes from esoteric stuff and sometimes from occult. But my main alignment would be Gnostic alchemist, kind of. Deist Gnostic alchemist.
Looks like we have a comment from the chat. This is from J3301. Yehoshua, from 12,000 BC, the ancient Hebrew root name meaning Yahweh is salvation. Yeshua, from 500 BC, the shortened Hebrew Aramaic form used after the Babylonian exile and spoken by Jesus, period.
Yes. Isha. So what most people don't know is that the Christ, he had a Galilean dialect of Aramaic in the region he was born in. And that name was Isho, and then it became Yeshua in Hebrew, or Yeshua, or Joshua, and then from there into Greek, and then from there into English eventually.
Gotcha. That's something people really don't understand that much about today.
I think it's kind of common, because if we look at DC Marvel comics or the kind of stuff we have today, we refer to it as Captain America and Superman and Batman. But I mean, every language you translate it into, all of a sudden Batman is no longer Batman. In my own native language, he becomes the leather note, kind of. And I feel that's just how humans do it through time. Like we say Confucius, Lao Tzu, Sun Tzu. But Chinese people, they pronounce it completely differently. It's like you say to a Chinese person, do you know who Bruce Lee is? And they're like, no, I have no idea. Because that's our Western version of his name.
Oh, really? What's his Eastern version?
I can look it up. Let's see. It's the same thing with Jackie Chan, right? Li Junfang.
Li Junfang. Interesting.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Bruce Lee, he is pretty big in China, though, isn't he?
Yeah, of course. Jackie Chan, too. But when they tried to get through into Hollywood, they had to change to a moniker, an alias, in order to, you know, be relevant. Because most people don't speak Mandarin.
Sure. And J3301, he wants to elaborate a little bit more. 2004... 400 CE, the specific Christian Syriac pronunciation that evolved during the late antiquity period. He's referring to the first comment.
No, so Syriac is what we call it today. It would be, what's it called? The P region. Prince of Persia, the Persians. So Syriac would be in that region. But the only people that actually kept the Syriac version of the Bible, which is known as the Peshitta Bible, is the Ethiopians, if I remember correctly. So it's kind of a dead language.
Is that the same as the Ethiopian Bible?
Maybe. But it's called the Peshitta Bible, and it's specifically written from Aramaic. Yeah, I can type it in chat as well. So
now, you know, on this topic... a lot of people disagree about this, but to you, Jesus Christ was a real person, right? He was a real historical figure.
Yes, he was. But the story about him has been changed by the Council of Nicaea and Constantine to kind of fit with the Roman state religion narrative. So there are some things that they cut out, which was way too powerful for the masses to learn at the time. But Constantine, he knew he could not stop his message. He could only thwart it and change it in order to fit the state religion that he then adopted after the Roman Empire fell, the Byzantine Empire.
Why did they do this?
I think it's because imagine a magician, a mystic that shows up and he's like, you should connect to God. You should really turn to God. You should really work. You should find salvation. And then he says something like, oh, all you have to do is say abracadabra. And then boom, all your problems are gone. And then Constantine, he wants control over the people, over the Roman Empire. So he's not going to teach people like true liberation. He wants to teach them an external salvation-based saving, that you have to go to a church, you have to listen to a priest, you have to do stuff. And it's like, if most people don't know that the Bible was unavailable for most people up until like 1700, 1800, it was only people who spoke Latin from the Vatican that could actually translate it into the native language of the country they were in. So a lot of people didn't even have access to the stuff in the Bible. And then it's like, if you follow the QAnon people on Twitter, they will say something like the original Bible was actually 600 books. And so we only have 66 books of 600 that we're missing. And some people say the non-canonical gospels are part of that or not part of it. Some people say it's the Vatican that took those books and kept them in the archive underneath the basement. You know, we don't know where those things have gone, but the Dead Sea Scrolls is really interesting because it confirms, you know, Old Testament scripture. And we kind of need to find something that can confirm more of the books that are also missing from the Bible.
I know when, you know, the early archaeology was going on, one thing that offered a little bit of proof was us finding the cities from the Old Testament.
I found Eden, by the way, in my video. I was doing some research. So it's in Eridu in Iraq, or what's known, what used to be called Uruk. And so it's spelled Eidin, E-D-I-N, instead of the regular spelling. And if you look on Google Maps, you can almost find it. And so
hey,
I think...
You know, sorry, go ahead.
No, so I think in terms of the stories of the Sumerian tablets of the Old Testament and the Babylonian era, I think Eden is somewhere in Iraq.
Yeah, I agree with you because the stories about Enki had two sprouts of water coming from them in the old caricatures or pictures, you know, that they'd carve, and the Tigris, I believe, and the Euphrates were coming out of him. So that would, I mean, if we assume that Eden was around Eridu, that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's just spelled differently. So Eden in the Bible and Eidin in the Sumerian.
Eidin.
Yeah.
And going back to the Freemasons, it sounds like you garnered quite a bit of knowledge from them. Mm-hmm. Would you say that Freemasons are okay to kind of talk to and hang out with, or are they dangerous?
It depends on what lodge you run into, because it's based on privilege and secrets and ranks that they have. So the first degrees of a normal lodge, they will essentially lie to the Mason and tell them bullshit, like, I don't know, things that sounds all right, but it's actually just to test them and see if they can keep their mouth shut. And then after a while, they introduce you to deeper, heavier topics. And then after a while, they start talking about questioning your morality or doing questionable moral acts. And that's where I disagree with the Freemason doctrine completely. And a lot of people will say, no, but it's just a group of old people drinking whiskey and smoking cigar. And it's like, yeah, that's what they want you to think. It's just a harmful cult or religious group. But from what I understand, when you get to, say, degree 25 in the American system, or say 8-9 in the European system, they will start doing really weird stuff that then borders on what we call satanic ritual abuse and Luciferianism. Oh. So in some countries, you can find a lodge that have taken a step away from Satanism and essentially just kind of read, practice meditation and prayer. They're good moral standing people. And then in other countries, you will find essentially the Hollywood Black Lodge kind of celebrities doing their Madonna and Britney Spears stuff.
I've heard that there's a little bit of a war going on, and that's why the Freemasons use the black and white chessboard to represent the Black Lodges, perhaps in a war against the light side. Do you feel there's any truth to that?
I think in terms of the chess-checkered floor in their lodges is actually a symbol that represents morality, the white and black of moral, like yin and yang. And then them standing on top of the floor means above morality. That's what I think it means.
above morality. You know, I've had people tell me that that's what the Illuminati believe about themselves, that they are actually beyond good and evil.
Yeah. Well, it's not beyond. It's more free will. You know, like God gave us free will, but he also said like, oh, you maybe you shouldn't do certain things. And then some people will start justifying and saying, yeah, but God is not here, so it doesn't matter. And then it's like, okay, would you sacrifice a goat to a random deity from the Babylonian era? It's like, no, not really. But then eventually something inside people pushes them over into that, and then they start doing witchcraft. And witchcraft is like a whole other, not theory, but ideology, but like what happens to energies of spirits when they die, and can you capture those spirits? Can you use them? Can you utilize those spirits to do nefarious things? And they believe that they can. I'm not very much into witchcraft, but I understand what they believe in, and I don't agree with it either. But some of the stuff that they have comes from older traditions like Hinduism and Buddhism. So it's not like it's a new thing. It's an old thing. The floor is designed to remind every member that while the world outside is full of conflict. For, oh, sorry, I started reading it. You can read it.
Oh, yeah. Another interesting comment. I'm just kind of putting them up as they come. But this is from J3301 again. The floor is designed to remind every member that while the world outside is full of conflicting forces, a Mason must strive to walk a straight, balanced path between them. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, that would be the technical definition, but the one I said I feel is more correct. They think they are above morality, and that's what I think it symbolizes.
Gotcha. Circling back to the discussion about Christianity and the Council of Nicaea, now, when this happened, do you feel that there was a takeover of paganism?
I think that the pagan beliefs that already existed in Europe, Yule tradition of Scandinavia for Christmas and solstice for winter and summer and other things were very popular at the time when Christianity was kind of in its orphan stage. And Council of Nicaea and Constantine is like looking at how can we make this interesting for all these people living here? Because they have to convince the Greeks, the Romans, the barbarians, the Germanic people, the English, you know, and this is like before the medieval era as well. And they just change things to fit it in a little bit. So we can use one example. The Christmas tree comes from Nimrod. And Nimrod is Baal. And so when they say the 25th of December is the birthday of Christ, it's actually Nimrod's birthday. And what are the things that Nimrod had? He had reindeers and he had evergreen trees. And so that was baked into it. But then it becomes Christianity, which is monotheism instead of poly or paganism. But there's still pagan elements in it. And I don't know, like, I don't celebrate Christmas like people, like, I enjoy the holiday, but to me, it's like, okay, you know, Christ was born most likely on the 11th of September, and because of that, the date is completely wrong. We're worshiping Nimrod on the 25th rather than, you know, Christ's real birthday, and that's just how it goes. I mean, there's probably way more examples that I can't think of on top of my head as well.
Yeah, that's definitely something I'd like to talk a little bit more about. Now, Nimrod being Bel, is there anything more you can tell us about that?
So, in my videos, I've essentially gone down this path of decoding the link between ancient religions and modern religions. And a lot of people will say that Hinduism is completely different from Judaism and Christianity or any Abrahamic faith. But the truth is that the older faiths have actually inspired, influenced, and pushed and evolved the faith. So that when you look at, example, Enoch from his own book and from Genesis, people will think that Enoch is a complete different character than what we know. But then you look into Hinduism and all of a sudden Hinduism talks about a heavenly scribe who wrote the Puranas, the very famous texts of Hinduism, and he had direct contact with the divine council and traveled to heaven. And then we find that Enoch also do the same thing. So Vyasa in Hinduism and Enoch is practically the same character with different names. And then you find out that Enoch is actually Thoth from the Egyptian pantheon. And then you understand, if you've studied Greek pantheon, that he then becomes Hermes Trismegistus. So the same character has different names through different faiths, but it's still connected. And that to me is really fascinating, if you compare it to, say, science, evolution, and all the other stuff out there.
I agree. I'm somebody that finds that aspect of religions and mythology, if you even want to call it mythology, that you can link pretty much the same god all over the globe, from the Norse to the Asian stuff to Indian and
you.
One question though: what about Marduk, who is supposedly the son of Enki? Is he Bel, and is he Nimrod as well?
I think that the Sumerian deities are actually the same as the Babylonian and Canaanite deities, just with different names. And then in Hinduism, there's 1,000 gods. But if you look at the main, quote, trinity, it's Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. And those are also the same as the ones you mentioned. I don't know exactly 100% which one is which, but if you use AI today, you can essentially say, you know, strip all these famous religious people of their name, compare them side by side, and then you'll see that, oh, there is a god of fertility, there's a god of the rye grain and beer, of wine, there's a god of so-and-so, and then every pantheon mirrors that exact same structure with small variations, because every time a religion shifted from one land to another, it went from one language to another language, and when that country got conquered, the enemy would look at their religion and say, oh, we're going to take this and make it our own religion. And so they change all the names and characters, but keep the general structure the same.
Yeah, definitely. And I totally agree that it can be very hard to really say who's who. What about a Set in the Egyptian pantheon?
That's Horus' uncle, yeah?
Yeah.
So Set here becomes also kind of a metaphor for Saturn, which is the adversary, but he's like a real person in the pantheon. In the New Testament, when Christ is in Matthew chapter 4, he's tested by the adversary, which you could also interpret as an internal force he's trying to fight. But in the Egyptian, he is externalized as Set, and he does some really nasty things. The Egyptian pantheon is full of really weird stuff. If we talk about the flood myth, the Noah's Ark story, every other religion in the world has their own flood story of how Thor defeated the giants and Mjolnir, and then the thing happened. And then in the Gaelic faith, you have Tuath Dianan and so on and so forth. But in the Egyptian pantheon, the flood story becomes bloody. It is absolutely a massacre of humans, not just a water flood.
Really?
Yep. In the Egyptian pantheon, it goes something like, Ra, the god, knew that the humans were conspiring against him because he was growing old. So he relinquished his role to another pharaoh. And then what happened was he summoned Hathor and Sekhmet, which came down and started eating humans everywhere. And it was flood of people dying. Yeah. And then in order to trick Sekhmet into stop eating the humans, because Ra wanted to keep the humans, he didn't want all of them to be killed, he essentially dyed a whole lake of beer red. And then Sekhmet drank the beer and got drunk. And then they sealed segment into something. And so the Egyptian pantheon is really in detail about what most people consider the flood myth story.
Okay, and now leading into the time of Moses, a question for you that you may or may not know is, sorry, bad timing for that cough. But would you say Akhenaten was Moses?
I think so, yeah, because in my research, I stumbled upon it. What's interesting about Moses is that both Moses and Noah share very similar characteristics. And when you compare Moses and Noah to Enoch, they also share very similar features. And one thing that's interesting with Moses is that he was a shepherd, and Christ, he was the shepherd as well. And that is then tied to the psilocybin mushroom, because that's where you would find the mushroom growing on cow dung. So Moses and Noah are most likely, if they're not the same character, they're doing almost the exact same thing. And then Enoch becomes also a mirror of Moses and Enoch and Noah as well.
It's funny that they were both dealing with an ark.
So about the ark, a lot of people say it's the Ark of the Covenant. It's a magical device. It can create food out of nothing and whatnot. And from what I understood it, Thoth, who is also Enoch, he had the emerald tablets. And the tablets were the same kind of stone tablets as Moses received on the mountain. But they're saying, kind of implied, that the Ark is the scripture from Vyasa to Thoth to Hermes Trismegistus, and the Ark being carried is the preservation of the divine knowledge from the past.
So oftentimes it sounds like we're looking at this stuff a little bit too literal.
Yeah, but at the same time, scientific academic people will say that, oh, religion is a myth, and mythology is like extreme or exaggerated, or it's like written in a parable kind of language. But then it's also like, what if it's literal? Like, what if some things are super literal and actually happen? And then some things are symbolic, like Moses and the burning bush is like a really funny 420 joke when you think about it, because he was burning some form of bush and then he had apparitions from God. And, you know, hemp was available back then as well. It's even in the holy anointing oil in the Hebrew translation asks for 33 kilos of hemp to be put into the oil.
Wow, really? I had no idea. That's very interesting.
Yeah. The problem is the translation, because they used the old Akkadian word kanabosam, and then in the English translation in the, say, the New Testament or the Bible, they changed it to be lemongrass, myrrh, and other things, sweet calamus. And incense cane is also, the word is root, is also coming from cannabis, the cane of cannabis. So they had these things. Yeah, they had them in the past. They used to infuse wine with THC, and they would get pretty high and drunk.
Oh, I didn't know that either. So the wine they were drinking back then was a completely different thing.
Yeah. So let's see. The wine god of Sumeria. It was Geshtinanna in Sumerian, was the god of the wine. And so they would infuse THC into normal wine. And as you know, wine was a luxury item back then as well. It wasn't very easy to produce. So only for priests and the holy people in the temple were allowed to use these fancy things.
The thing about the Sumerian religion / mythology is that we have so little of it. I feel like if only we had more information, like if we could translate the tablets better, or if we had more of them, I feel like there's a lot missing there that we don't understand. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. There is. And it's really annoying to listen to a religious scholar say that every religion is distinct and separate and unique and shares no traits with anything. And then the more you research and look into it, you find out that Christ is mentioned in the Puranas in Hinduism. Christ is mentioned in the Himalaya scripture and temples there. They have paper from way back. And so the red thread of all these wise men is kind of lost, because we want to say, oh, it's a distinct religion, it's a distinct faith, and therefore these people are separated. They're not at all in the same family or category at all, but they are. They are very much connected.
One thing that has always puzzled me was Jesus calling himself the bright morning star. And people have told me that's him telling us he's actually Lucifer, but what do you have any insight into that?
So let's break it down, because this is something I repeat on Twitter a lot. Let's start with the adversary. Most people will say, oh, well, that's the devil. Yeah. But the question is, where do we find the adversary? Most people will say, oh, it's in other people. It's in people that you meet. It's people that are trying to tempt you or trying to say, oh, you can have all the kingdoms of the world if you follow me. And then it's like, okay, so it comes from other people, but what about yourself? What about, like, internally, where do we find the adversary? And from my research and understanding, we're talking about the ego and the psyche. And so an ego that is unchecked or has not learned anything spiritual is essentially very desire-driven. A lot of stuff comes from desires to want to do things, including lust and whatnot, or gluttony. And the defeat of the devil internally is when you look at your ego and your desires and you essentially say no. And you say, like, no, you don't have control over me. Like, I don't want to eat cake, because if I eat cake, I gain weight. And then the ego is like, yeah, but cake is so nice and it's so cheap and it's so good. And it's like, no, I don't want to eat cake. Like, but normal people, they will fall for that desire, and they're locked into the desires of the adversary. And then we get Lucifer, who is only mentioned once in the Old Testament, and that's like a reference to the king of Babylon. And what happens here is that the Masons take on a whole different belief or idea of what Lucifer represents. And then normal Christian people, I would say, they say, oh, but Lucifer is associated with the devil, therefore Lucifer is also the devil. But what's interesting here is that Lucifer becomes a symbol that could also mean Joe Blow, aka common man. So it would be a symbol representing all of us, all the people living on earth. It would be one type of Lucifer. And then those people who have not defeated the adversary are bound in the chains of the ego and the adversary, and they become walking automatons or NPCs of Lucifer. Then you get Christ, who rises himself up from the common spiritual world and becomes something, and then referring to himself as, oh, the risen morning dawn star. And then people will be like, oh, that means he's the devil, and that means he's you know, contradicting himself. But I think in the symbology here is that he's saying that perhaps he's not just a Lucifer, a common man, but more like the light bringer. And then there's like translation stuff happening with how we say it as well. But I do not think that Christ is Lucifer. I think he's the opposite of Lucifer, because Lucifer falls into the seven deadly sins very easily. And yeah, you know what celebrities do, and they think that they are Lucifers. And then Freemasons, they call themselves Lucifer. I even have a video in one of my videos that I downloaded where a Christian guy talks to a Mason outside of a Shriner's Lodge. And then he says, Lucifer is wholesome, innocent, pure, and whatnot. And that's their idea of their Lucifer, which they are. And then I would say that the moment you cross over into satanic ritual abuse, you are definitely, quote, Lucifer. But it's an overused title, because most people don't know what it means. But then Luciferianism is like a whole ideology in itself. And that's like the worship of humanity or worship of self. So the Masons worship themselves through Luciferianism.
That's interesting because there was a brief period where I encountered some, I believe they were Luciferians, and it seemed to be some kind of hive mind. And like you say, they all seemed to think that they were Lucifer. So it was like each individual believed themselves to be Lucifer, but you know that doesn't make sense. Like, how could there be more than one? Yet it holds true. It yeah. seems that that's part of the Luciferian initiation.
Yeah. So according to the more esoteric interpretation is that Lucifer is just Joe Blow. It's just any person. And then the adversary is the ego of that person. And they're bound through the seven deadly sins and their desires to do the lust of their father, which is, you know, lying, cheating, stealing, doing all that. And a normal person would never say, like, oh, I am a Lucifer, because they don't even understand the concept. But then the Masons are like, yeah, but we are Lucifer. And then it's like, but what? Why would you call yourself that? And then we can also look at in the Old Testament, we can interpret it as Lucifer tried to steal the light of the gods in heaven, and he's punished by being thrown down into earth, or where we are, or hell, they call it. And so, like, it becomes a journey also of the soul, going up into heaven and falling down into earth, and then going up into heaven and falling down to earth. So it's a very interesting symbol as well.
Definitely. And going back to Yahweh, out of all these other pantheons and things like that, could you identify Yahweh like in Sumerian or Egyptian or anything like yeah. that?
This is where it gets interesting. So in Exodus, there's one verse that really shattered my worldview on who Yahweh is. And that is, Yahweh is a man of war. Yahweh is his name. And then this has been then translated into the Lord is a man of war. The Lord is his name. And I'm just looking at that phrase and I'm like, oh, that doesn't make sense. Like, why would Yahweh, if he's an all-present God in heaven, why would he be a man of war? And then I find out that by doing the whole AI comparison thing, he is Vishnu. And so Vishnu and Yahweh have very similar properties as a deity. And then the name is lost through the Chinese telephone game we're playing. And then if you look at Canaanite deities, this is a Wikipedia article you can look at. You scroll down, you will find Yahweh mentioned as a Canaanite deity next to Baal and Moloch, and other deities. And even the word God itself. So we say God, 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 God to everything. God is God, God, God. But then in the Bible, the God of fortune is spelled G-A-D. So even the word God itself is not even a reference to Yahweh. It's a reference to a Canaanite God of fortune.
That's definitely new to me.
Yeah. I think in the Old Testament, it's just mentioned in English, like the God of fortune. But then the actual pronunciation of the word is God, as, you know, almost like a stinger of a hornet. So now it's been fascinating digging up all these different things and connecting them and seeing how it works. And a lot of people, you probably know about Gnosticism as well, right? And Gnosticism The Gnosticism takes the whole Bible story and just flips it upside down. All of a sudden, Yahweh is not the creator God, but a jealous God that tries to create floods to kill humans. And then Satanists will argue that, oh, Yahweh killed more people in the Bible than Satan did. It's like, oh, great, but that is not important. But Gnosticism really twists it and all of a sudden introduces the concept of the Demiurge. And the Demiurge then becomes this kind of puppet mannequin god that we put in the place of the real God. So essentially a lower false deity to represent the higher. And then people fall into worship of that lesser deity, believing they are worshiping the higher deity. And so it becomes really weird for some people. And the name...
Do you mean like how... There's El or El Elyon, and he's the most high, and they believe Yahweh is the same, but actually he's not, or is he?
Yeah, So according to Exodus, Yahweh is a man of war. And if he's a man of war, that means he has two legs. He has most likely arms and a head. And that would put him on the same level as Christ, because Christ is then God incarnate into flesh. And then Yahweh is also God incarnate into flesh. And that doesn't make sense either, because Yahweh is supposed to be the father of Christ who is up there. And we're all the children of that thing. But Yahweh and Christ cannot both be walking on earth at the same time or in the same era. It's just weird.
Yeah, and I know I've seen some YouTube videos about this, but they make it seem like Yahweh was actually walking around. Like, I believe there's a passage that talks about Yahweh actually coming down and going into one of the Hebrew tents or something like that.
Yeah. Now, so an interesting text from the Vedic literature is about Ishaputta. And I want to kind of read this quick, but I'm not going to read the whole thing. I just want to get the kind of the juicy parts of it. And so the king, this is a conversation between a king and most likely Christ at the time. So the king says, "Who are you, sir?" And he replies, "You should know that I am Ishaputra, the son of God." He replied blissfully, "And I am born of a virgin. I am the expounder of the religion of the Mlechas," which means barbarians, "and I strictly adhere to the absolute truth." Hearing this, the king inquired, "What are the religious principles according to your opinion?" Hearing this question, Ishaputra said, "O king, when the destruction of the truth occurred, I, Messiah the prophet, came to this country of degraded people where there are no rules and regulations, finding that fearful irreligious condition of the barbarians spreading from the Mlecha Desha, I have taken to prophethood. Please hear, O king, which religious principles I have established among the Mlechas. The living entity is subject to good and bad contaminations. The mind should be purified by taking recourse of proper conduct and performance of meditation on the chanting of holy names of God. By chanting the holy names, one attains the highest purity. Just as the immovable sun attracts from all directions the elements of all living beings, the Lord of Surya Mandala, the solar planet, who is fixed and all attractive and attracts the hearts of all living creatures, thus, by following rules, speaking truthful words, by mental harmony and by meditation, O descendant of Manu, one should worship that immovable Lord." And so that is from Hinduism, and it's one of the few texts that proves Christ's existence outside of the Bible.
Yeah, that's really interesting. How do you feel about the idea of Christ returning? Do you believe that's going to happen?
I have one thing that I follow. If I'm not him, I'm going to carry this name until he comes up to me and say, "Give me my name." So I kind of want him to come. You know what I'm saying? I'm looking for him. I'm searching every day. I'm praying for it, just like any other, quote, Christian. But it's also like, what if I'm here on a mission to be the messenger for him? What if I'm here to remind people of something that they've forgotten? And it's like, can I say I am a reincarnation of him, or he's one of my past lives? Can I say I have a direct descendant lineage to his family or bloodline? Maybe, I don't know. But I really wish for him to come back. At the same time, we know, according to Revelation, that the so-called Antichrist will take the opportunity of us waiting for Christ to come back and turn it into AI schlop, or a politician, you know, that needs votes, or a leader of a corporation or something, or a leader of a country. So a lot of people can also be deceived by public figures and elevate them to Christ status. So if we take the current US president as an example, the Q people will say that he is the bloodline of Jesus because he's in the same family as John F. Kennedy, and John F. Kennedy goes all the way back to the Christian times. And so that's their take on it. And I'm just like, okay, cool. And then, you know, like the people are then worshiping this political figure. He's the savior of America. He's going to fix everything. He's going to do everything. And then there's another take that Trump is actually Cyrus II or Nebuchadnezzar. And that would make sense from an Old Testament perspective. And then there's lots of talk about the funny hat people worshiping Trump as their Mochias, which is their version of Christ that never came, because they don't believe Christ ever came. They believe they're still waiting for him. Was that?
Mochias. Oh, I was trying to pronounce that. Mochias.
Mochias, I think they call it in Hebrew. Yeah, so it means Messiah, but it's pronounced differently.
Yeah, you got to work on your accents when trying to speak other languages. That's tough. No, but yeah, that's really interesting stuff. I just don't feel like Trump is really, really showing the qualities of a savior or a messiah or really an enlightened individual at all. To me, he really comes off as the exact opposite of that.
And that's because, first and foremost, he is a Freemason. And he's not open about it. He hasn't talked about it. He doesn't share it with people. But it's clear from his hand signals that he does from time to time, it's the same mudras or hand seals as Andrew Tate uses. And it's the same one used by celebrities David Letterman or Jimmy Kimmel. And these different hand signs they do are to charge their energy fields and whatnot. But it's also to virtue signal. It's essentially showing off, hello, I'm part of the club. I'm part of the club of the people. And Trump has been seen using all kinds of hand signals. In fact, the Q people who follow him will interpret him farting against the wind as a sign from God. And then they will build on that. But, you know, I think he's amazing. So,
that's wild. My God. You know, and I seen two pictures that would make me agree with you. The first was Trump was holding some kind of, I don't know what it was. It was some kind of bib or napkin, or maybe it had something to do with Google. But there's a picture of him holding it in front of himself, basically mimicking a Freemasonic apron. It looks exactly the same.
Yeah.
And then there's another
picture. The Gmail logo from Google is also a Freemason apron.
Yeah. And then the G for the G as in Freemasonry.
Yeah.
Then there was a picture that was actually, I believe, it was made by a Freemason, or it was a picture of Freemasons where it has a Freemason in it. And I believe Trump is in front of the painting and he's doing his little circle. The OK sign. Yeah, the OK sign with his hand. And
but that also means 666.
Yeah, between those two, that was enough proof for me to know that he's a Freemason, if that makes sense.
Jay said in the latest chat there, Trump has Freemason rings, sure. And I believe that too. So they have specific rings that they have. And each ring shows their allegiance or the lodge that they're part of, usually.
Gotcha. Yeah, Jay, if you have any pictures of that or anything you can go on, I'd love to see that. You could send that to me.
But here's where we can recap, because you said earlier, you said you've heard that there's kind of a war between the lodges, between different factions of Freemasons and whatnot. And if we're going to play on that idea, that would mean that Trump is then part of the opposite of the mainstream Freemason lodges. He's part of Jesuits or the Great White Brotherhood or something like that. And they are technically opposing satanic ritual abuse, Luciferianism, and child sacrifice and abortion for no reason and stuff like that, Planned Parenthood. But also, if you look through history, there's something called controlled opposition, which was made famous by Lenin. But I think controlled opposition actually goes back thousands of years, where they will put someone in the position that looks like a savior. He looks like he's improving things. He's making things work. But what he's actually doing, he's building a foundation for the next person that will take over. So let's just talk a little bit about like legislation of things that he's pushed through, right? They have
technology that they used for the Venezuelan presidential raid, where they said they discombobulated the soldiers, nosebleeds were shooting out of their face, and they ended up crawling in the fetal position on the ground because the weapon they used was a LIDAR or something like that, a sonar, very strong auditorial device, right? And so yes, Trump has this technology. He has this technology. And then let's say, God forbid, that the opposite team wins next primary, then he's essentially handing over this technology to the next administration. And judging from the last 4 years before him, we cannot really allow that to happen. So a lot of people are saying in the conspiracy circles that Trump is building the New World Order machine underneath our feet. And then he's going to rug pull everyone. And then the next administration is essentially going to use what he built. And then we're going to blame them for using the legislation that he pulled through.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. It seems like, especially his second term was all about getting, and even the first term with the Supreme Court at the end. But it seems like he's doing everything to move pieces into position, like you're describing. And I ask myself, Trump is so old. He's, I think he just turned 80 or he's close. Like, why does he care so much about this stuff, being that he's probably not going to live to even foresee what it turns into? But if he's part of a greater plan, and whoever comes next is going to be even more prominent, or at least have the tools available to accomplish certain things, then it starts to make sense.
Yeah. But I'm not really an optimist about politics. I'm more of the two birds. The two wings are attached to the same bird, and the bird is an eagle, and the eagle is the Roman symbol and the Sumerian eagle. So the eagle is the empire that you can kind of trace. In one of my videos, I trace all the way from Sumeria to America, all the way, the whole royal bloodline, from George Washington to Queen Elizabeth, from all that. So it's really interesting. But you can focus on Bacon there for a moment.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I was about to mention, he made a comment a little while ago saying Constantine was controlled opposition. What would you say about that, Isho?
This is a very strong and loaded opinion, and I'm going to say I agree with it. So if we look at the early stages of Christianity, we have Paul going south, and Paul was a Phoenician and a Roman. So Paul could walk anywhere he wanted inside the Roman Empire. He had free reign, and he walks south, and then he has an apparition where Jesus speaks to him, and all of a sudden he converts, and he becomes the hidden apostle. And a lot of people disagreed with that, like Peter, Magdalene, all the people who were there. They didn't really agree with that because he was a self-appointed disciple. And then Constantine and the Council of Nicaea are scheming to create this new wonder religion. And then they have Paul write 50% of the New Testament. So like when we talk about the authors of the New Testament books, it's like Matthew is one, Luke is one. But then it's like all of the disciples could not read or write. Not everyone was handy with writing. And so it fell on the few people that could write. And Paul then ends up writing 50% of the New Testament. And because of that, I think that if we really unleashed the Christ teachings as they were, 100%, they would be much more elevated and different than Constantine's controlled opposition version of it.
Okay, interesting. Also, going back to Trump, Peg Henry mentions that he has many children and grandchildren. That's why, I'm sure he means that's why Trump is setting things up the way that he is. What do you think of that? Do you think that we might see President Barron or something like that?
Definitely. But there is one obstacle that will stop them a little bit. I don't know if you heard about the Trump coin token and the Barron token, the Melania token. They had a couple of Ethereum tokens that they were brandishing last year, I think it was, 2 years ago. And they essentially told people on Twitter via the Q movement, go and buy the Trump token and you will get rich. And what did they do? They rug pulled everyone. People lost their savings investing in this so-called shitcoin. And then Melania does the same thing, or supposedly, because what I understood is that it's actually the Trump administration that is behind these tokens, these coins that they made. So they made Melania, they rug pulled everyone, and then they made a Baron token, and then they rug pulled people again. And so unless the enemies created these tokens pretending to be the Trump administration, he rug pulled his own fan base three times in a row. And then he also have not drained the swamp yet, which is what everyone's waiting for. So he's falling back on his election promise as well. So in the future, for the sake of argument, say that Baron runs or Eric runs for presidency. If people don't have goldfish memory, they will surely not agree with the Trump family or dynasty again, and they might not win. So that's a possibility.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to also get back to the QAnon conversation. Are these people still around? I know they got kicked off of X. Are they still kicking around somewhere?
Yeah, they are still kicking around. And I can tell you because I've been following some of them and I know some of those people. Some of the people in the QAnon movement, or just Q movement, is essentially claiming to be John F. Kennedy Jr., his wife, his daughter, son. I think I might have also met John F. Kennedy himself, the killed president. But supposedly, according to their theory, all these people are alive, and they essentially did a Kansas City shuffle where the moment before John F. Kennedy Jr.'s airplane crashed, he supposedly jumped out with a parachute, and then he went under hiding because it was Hillary Clinton that wanted to kill him because he was trying to run for governor or something like that. And the QAnon people, or the Q people, are still out there. They still believe hardcore, you know, Trump's going to do everything, and all these leaks coming out from Telegram and all this stuff coming out is proof of the working. And then they say, oh, military is the only way. And, you know, when you know, where we go one all, we go all. It's kind of like Obama, yes, we can, all over again, but with new slogans that they've created. So, yeah, they're still around. I'll say that.
I remember a lot of them were really good researchers. And I actually enjoyed having them on Twitter or X, even though I didn't necessarily believe in. Yeah. You know, some of the things you'd say, like you know, for example, you mentioned earlier that they're kind of turning Trump into a mystical savior or something of that nature. But boy, some of those people were great researchers and they were really digging into the pedophilia stuff. Why do you suppose there was that pushback against the QAnon movement?
I think it was because it was getting very popular, and CNN and the Democrats and other news channels, they really don't have time to debate or argue against the points that they lift forward. So it's better from their perspective to just completely blank slate, ignore everything from the Q movement. I haven't seen CNN talk a lot about the Q movement. They've used one or two talking points in the last 5 years where they've said, oh, they said this, and oh, there's the pizza, Comet ping pong pizza stuff. But this is all back in 2008, 2012. A lot of people think that the Q stuff is new intel, it's new information. No, it goes back to WikiLeaks. It's old as the street itself. So, no.
I wanted to get into this character that you've covered a bit on your channel, but specifically his name is Imam Mahdi.
Oh, Mahdi. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, So this guy came out from Egypt 4 years ago. and he claims to be Islam's successor. And the title they give him is Al-Mahdi. The problem is he's not the first Al-Mahdi. There's been probably 20 plus Al-Mahdis in the past. So it's kind of a weird title to claim. He started a cult. Well, if you look at his background first, he did research on cults first. He did documentaries and videos detailing how cults work. And then all of a sudden, a couple of years later, he changes saddle and becomes the cult leader of his group, which is called the Religion of Peace something. It's on Wikipedia. And after that, he put lots of videos on his YouTube channel. He has 200,000 subscribers. His videos is kind of like mine, but going only through Old Testament, New Testament, and the Quran. So he's completely ignoring Buddhism. He's ignoring Hinduism, Canaanite, and Babylonian and Sumerian stuff. He just ignores it. And the stuff that he says is like in line with Gnosticism. A lot of it is. But then he falls back on like canon Christianity and then canon Islam. And lately, the latest video I made was because he got arrested for running a cult in London. So he was arrested on multiple accounts of slavery and abuse, maybe even sexual abuse.
Oh boy, I had no idea he was involved in anything like that, but being that he has a little cult around him, that would make sense.
Yeah, and I also looked into it. Apparently, his parents are Yale kind of people with high PhDs, and he's kind of rich. He has lots of money. So when he started his cult, it was kind of easy for him. But I covered in two videos. The first video is the re-titled one, and then the latest one is where I talk about him getting busted. And I essentially warn him in the first video. I say, like, it would have been better if you claimed to be the returning Buddha or something, because at least then you would have like decent points and values. But from the way he's talking, it's like his values are not in line. Like, he's a spiritual person. He realized something. He got far, but then he stagnated right there, and then he got stuck. So better luck next time, Abdullah.
Yeah. What do you think of these people saying that he performed miracles?
I think it's BS. Because I've done miracles myself. I've healed people. I've helped people. And I think they're very subtle. They're like small nudges of something that changes. It's not spectacular. It's not theatrical. It's not like, oh, a lot of people are going to see it. When you actually do miracles, it's usually between you and God, or it's like with the person you're helping who is also getting the thing. But from the videos, he's essentially saying, you know, I perform miracles. People witness me perform these miracles. But then you think about the human factor. Like, you could pay someone money today to have them on camera say almost anything. And so if there's an economical incentive, obviously people are going to lie for him or, you know, say, oh, well, he did miracles. But then when I looked up the miracles, it's just kind of vague stuff. It's like replicating the Bible. He's trying to do exactly the things from the Bible, which is a big red flag. When it comes to my miracles, I think that it's mentioned like a couple of times in the Bible in very small things, and it's not spectacular. And it's between me and God. It's my divine journey to get to that point. But he's making it a spectacle. He's making it externalized, essentially.
Gotcha. Is there any possibility that he's the Antichrist, or is he just too much of a joker?
I would say that he's one of the AC candidates, but I was going to save this topic for later, but if you want, I can tell you my candidate for 100% would be the leader of a country. It would be the leader of a country that we can't really discuss and we can't really talk about, but they've done some really bad things against their neighbors, and everybody knows that they've done it. And I think the leader of that country, he is already stepping in to the AC profile. And I have a twist of, I think that he's dead or he's going to be killed. And then they're going to resurrect him using CGI and AI. And then people are going to follow him as a dead person. Because there was rumors a couple of months ago that Iran missile strike the bunker he was in. And then his son took a 7-day Sabbath from the internet where he essentially didn't use technology, didn't use Twitter or anything. And people were then saying that it's typical in their religion that when someone dies that are close to them, they don't use technology the same way they don't use electricity on the Sabbath, right? So my theory is that if they're going to go all in with the whole Antichrist thing, it's going to most likely be a resurrected CGI version of a dead person. And then if you don't believe in him, if you don't follow him, you're going to be deemed crazy by those people, essentially.
Did you want to tell us who that is?
I want to be kind of vague. So I'm just going to say the country that did something really terrible to their neighbor during the last 2 years, that is always in the news about something, but they follow a very specific religion and they are a minority. Therefore, I can't really criticize them, but everyone knows kind of who they are.
All right.
The country between the two rivers, perhaps, is also a good kind of explanation.
Gotcha. Now, moving on from the topic of Mahdi and Antichrist, I want to get a little bit into artificial intelligence. I know that you feel strongly about this topic.
Yeah.
And why do you suppose that the elite, or perhaps society in general, is currently so obsessed with the artificial intelligence?
I think it's a toy. It's like a game. It's a new thing. So in the 90s, we were introduced to 3D graphics, and then we were introduced to the internet, and then video streaming, movies, and then from there, it became social media, and then AI. So it's like a natural progression and evolution. And the AI is a great tool because it's like a compilation of everything humans have done and said, you know, on the internet and in Wikipedia. You can find information super quick, just like Google, but even better. And you can take that information, you can manipulate them in information to get whatever you want. I myself use AI daily for my projects. I have Claude Pro. It works 100% all of the time when I want to use it. It's very useful. But like any tool, you can use it to build a house or you can use it to punch people with. And I think that we should build things with it, but a lot of people will misuse AI for sexual content or whatever they want to create in the moment. And that's what humans do. But AI is also scary because it's making us worthless. The people, our labor force, the way we work is becoming more and more worthless as more we use AI. And lots of people are saying online that if you don't adapt and start using AI, you will fall behind from all the other people who are using it. So let's check out the comment there.
This is from Kilburn. He says, AI equals forbidden knowledge. Those that were cast down have shown us forbidden knowledge and have been judged in the past. Future proves past.
That's a cute quote at the end there. That's what they say on Twitter a lot. So when we talk about the Sumerian, quote, fallen angels, they were the progenitors of human civilization. And so a lot of evolutionist scientists will say we crawled out of the ocean as a fish and we turned into a dinosaur and then we turned into a chicken and then we turned into a monkey and then we turned into a human. I do not believe that at all because there are no skeletons beyond, say, 11,000-12,000 years from now. The oldest structure is Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, and that was right around the time we discovered agriculture. And so the timeline of evolution does not line up with the mythology scripture that we have. And forbidden knowledge, it's like not really forbidden. I would say future knowledge. So like if you brought a computer back 5,000 years and you show them that, they would say it's sorcery because they've never seen anything like it being used, like a little mobile phone or a computer. So we could call it forbidden knowledge, but I would say that forbidden knowledge would rather be, say, satanic ritual abuse. That would be a type of forbidden knowledge that I do not want people to really dig into and fall for or believe in or practice, because it leads to suffering and madness. And so I don't think it's forbidden knowledge. I just think it's knowledge ahead of time that we today are discovering using computers, quantum physics and whatnot.
And what do you think of the idea that perhaps in Atlantean times, pre-flood times, they had computer technology or something similar?
That's another rabbit hole. You can find that in, there's a video called The Secret History of Earth. So electricity is attributed to Thomas Edison with the light bulb and the people who made DC right before. But if we go back and look at the Baghdad batteries, which was found in Baghdad, but they're most likely from Egypt, shows that they had these pots where they put an anode and a cathode, and then they use vinegar inside these batteries. So they could create maybe 5-6 volt. And if you hook them up in parallel, you could probably create more. So electricity was not really unknown to us. It was just that we didn't use the same word for it. And so another word that Tesla might have used is ether, because that's what it used to be before electricity. And ether is the ions in the atmosphere that creates lightning bolts. And so we can harness those ions and get free energy from it. And the ancients knew this. The pyramids were built to harness ion energy from the sky and concentrate it down into these chambers. And then the archaeologists will say, oh, they were just burial chambers for the pharaohs, and therefore they had no use and they had no practical application. But what I understand is that these pyramids were actually energy centers where you could walk in and you get beamed with the Schumann resonance underneath and then the ions from the top, and it could heal your body, it could make you grow, it could do magical things that they had. But that's just a fringe theory, really. But I believe electricity has been with us for at least 5,000 years. Because if you go into the Hindu scripture, or you go into Babylonian or whatever, you have Vishnu, who is a lightning god. And then you have Ra, who is a lightning god. And you have other lightning gods like Thor with Mjolnir, the hammer. And all of a sudden, it's like, so all these gods of the past had an electric affinity associated with them, yet electricity was discovered in the 1800s. And it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's very true. Boy, that gets me thinking quite a bit. I never looked at it that way, that these storm gods would not only be associated with things like, you know, ancient terms like chaos, but that might be some sort of, there might be a connection there to actual electricity. I know that there's some pretty interesting diagrams in Egypt it escapes me, but there's a particular temple that has some people on a table and some machines that look like they're giant light bulbs or some kind of mind control device or
This is the stone carvings in Egypt. It's a light bulb, essentially, that looks like a flower as a base where we have the screw. And then it's a big bulb. And inside of it is a snake, and it kind of shows like it's radiating light. So another theory is that the Ankh, the symbol that we know from that time, wasn't just a necklace that people would wear. It was also a wireless electricity device that could harness the electricity from the city where the pyramids were in. So according to the fringe theories is that they had lightning bulbs, they had electricity, they had batteries, they had ways to use electricity that Tesla rediscovered. So when Tesla coil, when he made the Tesla coil, which creates this fancy sparks and whatnot, that is ancient Egyptian technology.
How do you suppose he may have rediscovered it?
I think he was a savant. So he most likely had very spiritual dreams that he didn't talk about, that he didn't write down. And the quote that he left after himself was, if you understand 3, 6, and 9, you will have a great understanding of the universe and other things. And he was kind of, another quote he said was, if modern sciences focuses on esoteric science or technology, we will advance our understanding of science by several hundred years. So I think that during his sleep time, he would either dream or astral project into the Akashic Library, where he would download information that he would then try to build. Another famous example is John Searle, who made an electric generator. He said that all the schematics came to him in dreams in perfect squares. So all of his books is just full of perfect squares with numbers in them.
From J3301, he says Egyptian creation of life, in parentheses, the Dendera lie is what they call that. And thank you, Jay, because
thank you.
That made me remember, I believe it's the Temple of Dendera.
Yeah. Now, so another fringe theory is that the chainmail armor that was used in medieval times was not just chainmail to protect against blunt force and piercing attacks, but supposedly it was a way for them to use these electric weapons and swords and hammers. So when they struck each other with these weapons of electricity, the chainmail armor would act as a Faraday cage and discharge everything down into the ground. It's fringe. I don't know if it's true, but you know, electricity seems to have been with us for much longer than we believe it has.
I think I've seen those pictures of like knights fighting, and there's what can only be construed as electric sparks and things like that, and arcs and things like that coming off of their swords.
Yeah, pretty much.
Man, that's weird stuff.
When we talk about alchemy, there's the five major elements, and the hidden element for a long time was electricity, and they just call it ether. But then we learned in the later days that your body has electric analog signals through the nerve system, and that electricity is the ether of the body, and then the ions is the ether of the sky.
We got some more information coming through the pipeline. Again, from Jay, the bulb, the womb of Nut, the snake, the god of Harsamtas, the socket, the lotus flower, the wire, the lotus stem, the stand, the Djed pillar.
Yep. So I don't know if Jay wants to introduce himself, but he's very knowledgeable about a lot of ancient stuff, and he knows probably more than I do about certain things. But he's essentially breaking it down there that the bulb, the snake, the filament, the socket, the wire, and the stand is a light bulb, essentially. But it's split up into different symbols.
And you mentioned alchemy. I did want to talk a little bit about this. Where did this interest come from? Was this back in your days of talking to the Freemasonic gentleman or something else?
So I started out with Buddhism, Christianity, Rosicrucianism. I went into Kabbalah. I went into esoteric Judaism, Sufi, Quran, Muslim stuff. I discovered a lot of stuff. And then on my journey, I got introduced to alchemy as this, it's a very metaphorical and symbolic teaching and language of something. And a lot of people will say, oh, it's about making gold out of lead and whatnot. But that's just on the surface. What it's actually is, it's hidden teachings of meditation and mindfulness that was blasphemous according to the church. And so in order for these sects and groups and cults to hide their teachings, they would write in a metaphorical language of alchemy, where it would be about beakers, putting sulfur and salt together and mixing metals and whatnot. But if you actually follow the recipes that they write, you will blow yourself up. The chemicals will react in a very negative way. So everyone who tried to make the gold would fail. But then if you read it with a spiritual lens, you would see that it's about enlightenment. It's about grace. It's about bliss. It's about finding the divine within you. And so the church is saying, no, you find salvation outside of yourself. And then alchemy is this kind of rebel symbolic language where they're like, yeah, they say it's outside of yourself. But if you really look, God is everywhere. And so it's about connecting to the divine, but they don't have religious symbols that much. They have the Roman gods, which are the planets, but they don't have so much, oh, you need to worship this thing, or you need to follow this, or you need to do that. It's very cryptic language of distilling the waters inside of yourself and then separating it and then amalgamation and putting it together and stuff like that. But alchemy to me has become the red thread hidden in all religions. It's essentially what Christ was doing and teaching. It was what Buddha was teaching and doing. But they didn't call it alchemy because they had their systems already established. Alchemy came rather after Hermes Trismegistus in the Greek era, spreading into 1000 AD and then 1500 AD. And I would say most good alchemical texts are from around 1000 to 1500 era.
Is it really possible to like take a chunk of rock or something like that and turn it into gold?
Now we're talking about forbidden knowledge again. Like, if we look at the ancient texts, they had great expertise and mastery over metallurgy. And so if we take, for instance, Damascus steel, which is very famous because we cannot replicate it. We don't know how exactly they did it. We can make things that look like it, but it doesn't have the same strength and durability. And so how to make Damascus steel would essentially be a secret alchemical teaching that we have forgotten today.
Yes, some people try to make their own sort of Damascus steel nowadays, but I mean, obviously that's a fake, like the stuff we see on eBay and stuff like that, right?
It's as close as we can get to the actual thing, but the durability is the difference between a bad sword and a katana. A katana is folded thousands of times to create the structure that makes them super durable, whereas our swords in the Western medieval times were just blunt items. And the Damascus steel, I feel, is like a mix between what became katana later, the Japanese sword, and what we used to have. But it's a lost technology, of course. And most of the eBay ones are fake, but they're more decorative swords rather than functional swords, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. Backtracking a little bit, this was a comment that J3301 left when we were talking about the Egyptian light bulb and stuff like that. He says, it's literally how Ra was born. Actually, it's not technology. And I've heard that before, that Ra was actually a creation. Is there anything you could say on that?
I think that most humans from the era of Brahma to Genesis with Adam and Eve are all creations of what we call the fallen, the Nephilim, the heaven council, the divine council, whatever. And so even the gods, even the deities of, say, Egyptian pantheon are also created by the same force that created Adam and Eve. It's just that we elevate Ra in the divine family, and he's not like he's not human, but he's humanoid. And I think they were all created, because if we look at, say, gene technology today, we know that the famous Jeff, he had money invested into cloning, human cloning. And so we'll say, oh, cloning is a relatively new technology. We haven't done it before. But then if we look at the ancient, what if they had this forbidden technology? What if they already knew about it? Therefore, they could not only clone bodies, but they could also transfer their consciousness into the bodies that they create, which is another hidden forbidden technology.
Wow, that is definitely some scary stuff. Do you suppose that the elite are using some of these hidden technologies, perhaps to extend their lifespans or reincarnate in the future or swap bodies or anything like that?
Definitely, definitely. So reading the Jeff emails and all the documents released by the DOJ was a huge rabbit hole for me. And the stuff in it confirms essentially what's going on at the famous island, what goes on in the Bohemian Grove, etc. And so, like, these people obviously have a craving for ritual sacrifice. And in order to satisfy that craving, they're now leaving the normal human pick people off the street, kind of homeless people. And now they're looking at creating their own clone labs so that they can continue doing what they're doing without having to go and grab people from the street. But these people they have cloned are already people grabbed from the street. And the spiritual repercussion of being part of that is also quite hefty. But I believe the elite, they've kind of perfected cloning in the last 50 years. And the reason why we don't know about it is because all of this is black ops, red tape, super secret military, Area 51 kind of stuff. And so we're not allowed to talk or know about it, essentially.
Now, on that note, you feel that some of these pop artists, like, for example, Taylor Swift, might be a clone?
Yeah. Justin Bieber and Hannah Montana, classic example. One is a male, the other one is a female. But we also know that a lot of them likes to inverse. They like to cross-dress. They like to be the opposite gender and stuff like that. So it's possible that Justin Bieber is a girl who is a clone of Hannah Montana, or Hannah Montana is a boy cloned of Justin Bieber pretending to be a woman. And the... what was the Harley Quinn from the Suicide Squad movie, that actor? She looks like 3 to 4 different other actors from different times. And yeah. a lot of other people also do it. Yeah. And so I think that they do clone and they do have it. And if you were working at Hollywood and you needed an actor that you knew was good looking, could do everything you asked from them, I mean, the simple solution is like, yeah, we're going to clone someone. But then I found out something even more horrible. So when they sign this infamous contract with the devil as they sign up to become a celebrity, because there's a difference between being a famous person and being a celebrity. The black comedian says that, Dave Chappelle, he says, a celebrity is a character, an alter ego. A famous person is just famous. And so in the contract, the person signing it, be it JC, be it Taylor Swift, it says in the fine print, if you F with us, we're going to clone you and we're going to put you into the machine and then we're going to kill you. And that's what I think they do secretly.
That's really terrifying.
Yep.
I've also heard that certain entities, if you want to call them that, like these gray aliens, for example, that people report abducting them and doing experiments on them, I've heard those might be clones or creations or robotic. Do you have any thoughts on that?
So the theory that's going online is that what we call the gray aliens are kind of a neutral faction, and they can be attached to any other faction that they're working with. So if you just list them on the top, it's like reptilians can sometimes work with grays. The tall Nordics sometimes work with grays. The Pleiadians work with the grays. So they are a neutral faction, yet they are in many different factions. Being automatons, being clones, being robots, or being humans from the future that altered their genetics until it was indistinguishable, I don't really know. But if we look at the X-Files TV show, which is a really old classic, I'm going to spoil it a little bit because it's like 11 seasons, but Mulder, the protagonist, is looking for his sister who was abducted at a young age. And while he's on his goose chase,
he finds a cloning lab where he meets multiple versions of his sister. And then he uncovers a secret government program where they have people dressed as little gray aliens abduct people. And then the whole experiment in the spaceship is not on a spaceship. It's just in a lab somewhere in a bunker. And then when they come out of these experiences, they will say, oh, it was the grays that abducted me. But if X-Files has any truth in it, it would be more like the government pretending to be grays abducted you so that you wouldn't blame the government for doing it, essentially.
I've also heard that they might even be doing things like when they abduct a person, cloning the person, and when they abduct them, it's not that they're actually abducting them, but they have a clone in the ship or whatever it is, and they're transferring the consciousness. That's something that you kind of touched on earlier, and the experiments they're doing are actually on the clone body, if that makes sense.
Yeah. That would be what we call a walk-in or a shadow figure. So it would be someone in your family who gets abducted, your uncle, and then when he comes back, he's either the clone or he's the original. But then the clone or whatever could be somewhere else that they could be doing something with. And as you said, if they do consciousness transfer, they could essentially steal that man's identity and be that person, impersonating that person. He could then go to work and tell his superiors, we need to do this, we need to do that. But then the actual original, the uncle, he has no idea of what has been done in his name because they are very covert, they're very secret about it. And if it's true, it's like, yeah, who as a politician in any country could be a walk-in, could be a clone, essentially, and we don't even know it because they're acting and looking and quacking and walking the same.
Could this also be the source, cloning, I mean, could this also be the source of the whole Cabbage Patch Kids thing?
Ooh, that's a good one. So the Cabbage Kids ties back to the Tartarian Empire thing, the idea that America was not really discovered. It was more found the way it was with buildings and stuff from the Tartarian Empire. And then the World Fair was used as an excuse to show these buildings and then tear them down immediately afterwards. But the Cabbage Kids is like this classical government thing, like we need to populate an area fast. So we're going to take people, move them to California, move them to San Francisco, and we're going to use incubators, and we're just going to pop out these kids, and they're going to work the fields. They're going to be slaves, essentially. And if it's true with the Cabbage Kids, we're looking at human cloning being available around the time of the 1900s, essentially, which would be even worse than Jeff's emails.
Yeah. And speaking of Jeff's emails, I believe there was a exchange where he was talking to, oh, I wish I remember what it was, but he actually said that he himself is probably a Cabbage Patch Kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of scary. It's the same thing. Have you heard the theory about sometimes at the nursery they switch babies from parents?
Yeah.
Right. That's Cabbage Kids, Cabbage Kids and switching people's babies would be kind of the same idea, same field.
What about this whole mud flood? Jay's kind of talking about this stuff. He says, World's Flare is great mud flood, Tartaria, look into it with Cabbage Patch Kids. Do you feel...
Yeah.
That there's been some resets in the past where they had to maybe clone people and repopulate?
Definitely. Multiple times during our generations and through thousands of years. But it's like back in the days, I think it was just more natural. It was more the Nephilim mingling with the humanoids. And then we had offspring that turned into half giants and whatnot. And if you want to go down the giant rabbit hole, that's another thing about giant swords, giant doors and giants furniture and buildings and whatnot. But, no, I think that cloning in the past was more just selective reproduction. And then it turned out to be whatever it was. But I mean, if they did have cloning back then, I think it would be more for the elite or for the divine council. So we're talking about the Egyptian gods, the Babylonian gods, etc. They would have access to this technology, and then humans would just be humans. But then Adam and Eve is an interesting story in Genesis that, you know, he makes Adam from nothing and takes the rib to make Eve. And then if you look in the Greek mythology, you find a titan claying a human. He's making it out of clay. And so it's like very similar. But then it's like, okay, but think about clay. You can make it into anything you want. And so back then, it was like you could make little figurines. It was like plastic. It was like wood. You could carve it into things. So clay here could become symbolic for gene editing, essentially.
From Kilburn, he says, vampires and zombies were not created by Wizards of the Coast. Isho, do you feel there's a reality to the vampire?
Vlad the Impaler is very known to be associated with the title of vampire. But if we look at the tradition of drinking human blood and consuming and sacrificing, it goes back to Sumeria. It goes back to old times. In Aztec, you would tear people's heart out in order to get better corn fields and whatnot to affect the weather. And so it's part of human history. But like the vampires is a very specific group of people because they cross over into the adrenochrome stuff, and they believe that they can prolong their life by consuming young blood of other humans, and if that is true, then vampirism makes sense, you know, to be a very old thing. Zombies, I don't know. Zombies is like a little fictional. But when it comes to NPCs, when it comes to people paying taxes, yeah, sometimes those people do act like zombies. So.
And perhaps in the world of voodoo, the mind control that they use, that would be kind of like a zombie.
Yeah. Possession. Yeah. Definitely. I'm spiritual. I've seen possession. I've avoided trying to get possessed all my life. I've seen manipulation. I've seen nonverbal manipulation. I've seen black magic. So there are ways to make zombies. And if we talk about, say, MK Ultra from the CIA during the 70s, they were training to create zombies that could follow instructions and do assassinations of targets in different countries. And all they really used was hypnosis, psychedelics, and suggestive thoughts.
There's also a belief, mainly in the East, that the body has an energy within it. Some would call it ki, or chi, or kundalini, and that it could actually be used as part of martial arts training and even to attack an opponent. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you can look up John Chang on YouTube. There's an old video of a Chinese dude essentially lighting a piece of paper on fire using only his hand. And he does a form of acupuncture healing on his patients where when he puts his finger on their knee, he will send electric signals through their knee. So that it's like when the doctor hits it with a hammer. And he talks about this energy. He can also light up an LED light bulb just using his hands. And he says, you know, this has taken him years to cultivate. It's a very long practice. And you know, he can visualize, imagine, he can move energy around in his body to create electrical currents that I would say it could be 10, 12 volts just coming out of the fingertips. And so Aikido, Qigong, and all those kind of traditions is, again, lost technology, forbidden, lost knowledge that we don't have anymore. We have the rendition of it. We have the watered-down version. And she is coming from the lower root chakra, from the food we eat and from the oxygen we breathe and the prana that we absorb through our crown chakra or whatever. And in Aikido, I don't know if you've seen videos of people practicing Aikido, but it's just like joint locks. It's different things sure. they can do to manipulate a person with balance. But what they don't talk about in Aikido is that the ki in Aikido is also the same word as shi in Chinese.
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of people, they don't believe that such a thing exists. But to me, they're just being a bit closed-minded and not acknowledging the fact that we are all very brainwashed by this sort of modern materialistic science. If you even want to call it that, it seems like our science nowadays is very restrictive. But I also wanted to ask about the idea that there could be stargates or portals to other worlds. You know, there was the movie, the TV series, and mm-hmm. you hear rumblings every now and then. Like some people, there's that conspiracy theory out there that we actually went into Iraq to retrieve a stargate. Mm. Any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, so I think this kind of go hands in hand with the myth of the giant of Kandahar, where in Afghanistan, the U.S. military ran into a giant who took multiple bullets to defeat, and he just pierced a soldier with a spear and just killed people. And it's like the whole Stargate thing, it's funny because if you watch Stargate, the TV show, it goes back to the Egyptian things and Egyptian pyramids and stuff like that. And it's kind of, I call it the Anunnaki Stockholm syndrome, because they're trying to essentially portray the Nephilim as these advanced beings who has harnessed the energy to shoot out of the spears and whatnot. And teleportation is actually not such a new invention. I mean, sure. But assuming that the ancients, the divine council, had gene manipulation, cloning, then they most likely had spacecrafts. And if they had spacecrafts, they had faster than light technology. And if they had that kind of technology, maybe they were able to, instead of traveling across the space, they just open up a rift through space-time. And there's a patent on the Google website for patents where it essentially talks about this. And if you read the abstract of this machine, it essentially says that they open up a portal into hyperspace. And hyperspace is a dimension where light travels slower than the light travels here, meaning that the distance between objects in our universe gets shortened and you can travel much faster. You can like practically walk through. And that is modern technology. That is things that we have a patent for in the 2010. But the ancients, the Stargates, then it's like, where's the location of these Stargates? Well, America, Himalayas, the Tibet, Uruk, Iraq, Eden, somewhere in Africa. But then the theory or the rumors that people are saying is that the United States Army, the Marine Corps, has infiltrated, destroyed as many of these Stargates as possible so that the control of the use of this device is limited to certain locations like Mount Rushmore in the United States, the big military mountain complex and stuff like that, or the underground tunnels. But then came another conspiracy theory from like last year. The Paris Hilton hotels that are all over the world, they have a secret room where you can go in and you can program a portal and you can walk out in any Paris Hilton hotel in the world instantly. And they say that that is how the elite travels and that's how they smuggle things from place to place without going through borders and customs.
Jay mentions in another comment, Toth walked from Atlantis to Egypt, nothing between.
Well, if you read the Book of Enoch and you assume that's Thoth, like that's one journey. And then if you look into Greek mythology, you have Hermes Trismegistus. And so he's possibly walking from Iraq to India over the Himalayas into Egypt. From Egypt, he walks into Greek. But here comes the Gaelic mythology, which is really interesting. Tuath di Anann, or how we pronounce it, is most likely also Thoth fleeing Egypt after the calamity, the locusts, the starvation and famine. And they establish on Ireland the new Egyptian empire. And he brings with him Nova Scotia, or Scotia, which is the queen Nefertiti. And so I've traced this, and it's really interesting because it goes all the way into British royalty, Scottish royalty. From there, it goes to France, the Jacobites, the Jesuits. And then from there, it goes to Nova Scotia in Canada. And from there, it goes to Washington. And then it's all connected back through there.
What about CERN? What is CERN?
Now, CERN is an interesting device. And without Jay, I probably wouldn't really know what CERN actually is, because it was through Jay's AI that I was able to ask these questions. And it comes down to a device that most likely we would refer to as a black hole generator. And so the scientists at CERN, they think that they're smashing particles together by pressing a button. But what happens every time they press the button is that they accidentally create a black hole. And so CERN not only becomes a black hole generator, but also like a teleportation device for the whole planet.
Man, that's scary.
Yes. And so we had all these doomsday predictions before 2000. It was the 2000 bug for computers. And then everyone thought that was going to happen, but it didn't. And then it was 2012 for the Mayan calendar. And then what's interesting is that CERN was activated on 2012. And so if the Mayans actually predicted the doom of Earth, they would essentially say that Earth was in a location and then boom, it's gone. It's completely disappeared. And so from their perspective, they see Earth disappearing in 2012, which when CERN is activated would technically be correct. And what else was it? I had it on the tip of my tongue. I lost it. But it's about 2012. Yes. So what's interesting is that when we talk about the internet, the first known IP address on the public internet comes from, drumroll, CERN. So that's also an interesting coincidence.
Oh, wow. That is very interesting.
Yep.
Now, you know, Isho, I know you kind of, you like to use the avatar rather than show yourself on camera and stuff like that, which I totally understand. I guess my question would be, do you feel that your particular line of research and stuff you talk about, does it put you in danger, and have you experienced any gang stalking or harassment or anything like that?
So on a private level, not so much, but I feel sometimes as a targeted individual, because I've gone through lots of spiritual awakenings where, you know, first it's like dealing with the voice of your own thoughts. And then after that, it's dealing with intrusive thoughts coming from other places. And then you leap into this kind of voice in skull technology stuff that a lot of people who wear tinfoil hats, they're complaining about, where they think that the government can target people using technology and put thoughts inside their head. And I think that's very real, because it would explain a lot of the herd mentality that we see in the world. And then it's like, are they spying on me? Are they listening on my devices? I don't know. Sometimes it feels like they are, but it's not personal. It's more just, it's like data collection. They just want to suck up information from everywhere, so it's not like targeting me personally. But I feel that, you know, I'm not really in the mood to be a public figure with my face everywhere, because back in the old days, before YouTube was even a thing, Google used to tell people, do not use your real name on YouTube, do not use your real name for Gmail, do not use it. Then all of a sudden they buy YouTube and they switch ownership. Now they change tune completely. Now put your real name everywhere. Put your name, put your name, put your face, put your name. But I don't think that's a very good practice. It depends on who you are. But like, if we talk about the guy who invented the water car, he got food poisoned. And he's like a classic example of like what happens when you have a great idea and you try to bring it to the public, but the oil companies don't really like what you're doing. So I just like to be safe.
Fair enough. Now, being that we are in such strange times and we have people like the Iman Mahdi popping up, as well as others, such as the other gentleman you talked about, I would say that something's going on. I mean, this is called End of Days Radio, I believe, in the Book of Revelations. But what do you think of these times? Where do you feel we are headed?
I think, first and foremost, that Revelation went from a warning to an instruction manual. The Illuminati people, the elite, they definitely have studied the Bible. They know the Bible. They know Revelation somehow. I don't know if it's, you know, something to do in private or in their family, but they study the Bible. And they might not believe in it. They might not follow it, because eventually they branch off into Satanism and whatnot. And then so it's like, okay, so if we know the plagues are coming, we know the plagues are here, we know all the signs from Revelation, yet nothing is being done about it, I feel the government is complicit. They definitely know what they're doing. And the Mark of the Beast system is already implemented. The stuff from COVID-19 that we had back in 2019 is also mentioned in Revelation. People will have scars. They will have blisters on their skin. They will have agony of scorpion stings. They will want to die, but they can't. And I feel that's completely related to COVID-19 and all that stuff that happened with that. And then we have Klaus Schwab, the chairman of the World Economic Forum, coming out saying, you will own nothing, you'll be happy, you will eat the bugs, the Great Reset, etc. And I feel that the Great Reset falls in line with everything Revelation predicted, and people are sleepwalking straight into it.
Yeah, it seems that would be the case. I know there's a lot of stuff that goes on with the stars and the sky, and that stuff that has been tracked by like the Babylonians, et cetera, the list goes on and on. It's really interesting stuff. And I'd hope to continue the discussion at a later date, perhaps with a part two, but we are approaching the end of the program. So Isho, I thank you for coming on, but why don't you take one more opportunity to go ahead and step up on the soapbox or behind the podium, like I like to say, and just say whatever you'd like to say to the End of Days Radio audience out there. And would you please follow that up with anything and everything that you would like to plug or promote?
Yeah. I'm not going to plug much because I already got my YouTube channel in the description here, and I also said it earlier, but truth will not be televised. Truth will not be revolution. It's not going to come to people like, oh, it's a revelation. Oh, it's Christ. It's all that. It's more, the truth will be the little nuggets that people discover about, say, the Q movement, about the politicians, about the Illuminati. And these things are also dipped and mixed with a lot of rumors and theories and conspiracies. So it's hard to distinguish. What I would recommend is that you have something to compare with. You have a dichotomy where you need to compare different theories. You have to compare different truths, because not all truths are equal. And the first and foremost truth is your own self-awareness, what you have inside of yourself. You need to come to terms with what is the voice inside your head really, because a lot of people are blindly listening and following to that voice, which we know is the ego, which I said earlier could also be a symbol for the adversary. And when that shift happens, you take your first step into the first enlightenment. And so enlightenment is not like just one thing and then you got it. It's a stage, multiple stages. You go through it and you learn all the time. I'd like to say that you never stop learning. You are always learning, but then if you choose stagnancy, if you choose not to learn, that's when you fail. So do not take my words for truth. Don't take other people's words for truth. Go out and try to find it as well. Because all we can really do is point towards it. We can't really say the truth because people can then reject it. And the rejection can sometimes be stronger to truth than just following along. It was Mark Twain that said, it's easier to fool people than it is to convince them that they've been fooled. And so, yeah, question your own knowledge or you are stuck where you are. Question everything. Question everything. Like, why am I doing this? Why am I participating in this madness? Why are other people participating? If Christ says, love your neighbor, why are we invading our neighbor? Why are we killing our neighbors? And then the U.S. government will say, we are a Christian nation. We believe in God. And it's like, okay, but you kill people. You invade and kill innocent people. It has nothing to do with Christianity or religion or politics. You just feel like it. You just do it. And Christians then will say, oh, yeah, President Trump, he's the best Christian, whatever. But it's like, no, you have to really go back to the basics. Like, we have to take care of this planet. We have to take care of each other, because an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth will make the whole world blind. And eventually we won't have a world. And we also have to think about, like, do we want to give these people the key to Earth? Do we want to give them the keys to the temple? According to the rumors and according to Revelation, they will try to rebuild the third temple. But Christ says, I will rebuild it in 3 days. And they're like, oh, sure, buddy. And he's like, no, in the religion of the heart, in all of mankind. So he's saying the third temple doesn't come as a physical structure. It comes through you with the Holy Spirit. And that's what people have to understand, that as they're now going to build the third temple, we're going to watch biblical history happen. But then after they've built it, they're going to start doing their sacrifices, goats, humans, animals. And then all of a sudden is Moloch worship again. And then we have to take a stance and say, no, we don't need that. Christ said, do not circumcise, do not sacrifice, do not do these things. You don't need that to worship the true God within yourself rather than this external temple, external savior, external antichrist, etc. So I'll round it up with that. But thank you very much. Oh, you're muted there.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah absolutely. Yeah. And thank you, Isho, very much for coming on this program. It was fascinating. I had some great, absolute mind-blowing moments coming from you. And I'd love to do a part two sometime in the future, perhaps.
Yeah. No, so I'm available most of the weekends in the future. So you can just hit me up on X and then we'll talk about it.
Okay, we'll do. And on that note, I'm going to let you go. But one more time, thank you, my friend, for coming on. And we will talk to you again next time.
Yeah. Cheers, everybody. Have a good weekend.
Cheers. All right, that was Isho. Great guest. Phenomenal guest. You know, sometimes I come across people in the most, you know, nonchalant sort of happenstance ways. Like, I just kind of ran into this gentleman on X, and we kind of talked a little bit, and he told me a little bit what he was about. I was like, heck yeah, this is great stuff right here. I definitely want to talk to you, and I'm so glad that I did, and we'll definitely be talking to him again. That was about 2 hours. You know, we went a little longer because the guest was so good. And, you know, just thank you, everybody that joined us. Shout out to J-3301, another person that would be pretty cool to talk to on this program. I don't know if he does that sort of thing, but if you want to come on and talk to us, you know, just hit me up via email. I'm daniel@gmail.com. I'd love to talk to you as well. You know, we were interviewing your friend Isho and had a great time, and you were contributing to the discussion. It seems like you might have a lot to say as well. And shout out to everybody else that joined us for the program, and anybody else that listens to the non-live program, I'm going to go ahead and stop it there because it was a great show, and you know, nothing I have to say here is going to add any icing to the cake. So, it looks like Andy's stopping by to say hi. What's up, Andy? Good to see you lurking about. I know Logan was in the chat earlier too. Shout out to Logan, who actually joined us on the Michael Deacon program yesterday evening. As many of you know, I'm kind of in the co-host loop with the Michael Deacon program, so I'm kind of like I don't know what you call it, as sometimes co-host on that program, as well as hosting this show. So you can catch me on there. A little bit of a different show, a lot more comedy going on and goofing on stuff and stuff like that. And oftentimes we're joined by a legendary Misfits frontman, Mike Hideous, who has a lot of interesting views to share. But it was fun having Logan on the program. I think he's a pretty interesting person, and it was kind of funny introducing him to a different audience. And we'll definitely be talking to him again, as well as other classics like Dr. Robert and others that are friends of this show. We're not going to stop talking to them. We're just, you know, going to concentrate a little bit more on the one-on-one format, and we'll do a roundtable every once in a while too, because I know a lot of people like that format. But other than that, just thank you so much, everybody. Remember, you can get the show anywhere you get podcasts. I just uploaded all the more recent shows to Rumble. They're doing well. They're picking up a lot of views. I had no idea there was so much stuff on Rumble these days. Rumble is really advanced. They got an app now, and they just track everything. And you can get so much great truth type of content on there, as well as End of Days Radio. You know, BitChute is always out there as well. And all the other various places you get podcasts, Spotify. A lot of people listen through Spotify. I think, isn't Spotify the biggest? iHeartRadio, we're on iHeartRadio. And yeah, keep checking out End of Days Radio. We're back full time. On the 4th, I believe we're off. Or we are off. I am in control of that whole thing. So we are off on the 4th, but we'll be back the next week. We got another great guest lined up. But I will see you guys then. We're going to go ahead and hit one of our new songs here. And I will see you next time. I'm Daniel, broadcasting from those broken ruins. And I am signing out.
Calling out my name. Rust on tower stairs, ash on every rung. Late at night, the signal cuts like a tongue unstrung. Bigfoot in the tree line, wolves at the gate, vampires on the highway, talking about my fate. Daniel in the dust, to look up and stand. Jesus at the window with fire in his hand. Circles in the mud, rusty old radio station, breathing out that blood. Bigfoot by the tower, footprints in the clay. Every lie I ever trusted, falling away. Broken bells are ringing. Dead of town, I heard one true voice cut the thunder down. Daniel in the dust said, look up and stand. Jesus at the window with fire in his hand. The whole damn world keeps dragging me back. I will not kneel to a shadow made of dust. I will not bow to a mouth full of rust. No. Follow the sun.